The irony, though, is that if they succeed, if they actually do tear this country down, dismantle it as they want to, then the luxury and freedom and comfort that they take for granted really will disappear. And they will finally get the authentic version of the oppression that they so desperately want.
Matt Walsh speaking at this year's Issues Etc. Making the Case conference.
Unless we as the rational, we as the moral, we who understand objective truth, objective morality, unless we stand in the way for their sake and for our own.
You can watch and listen to Matt Walsh's presentation, Making the Case Against Woke Culture, with a recording of the 2020 Making the Case conference. We'll send you links to download a podcast and watch a video stream for a tax-deductible contribution of $250. Find out more at issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Well, today was kind of the day for a lot of parents, teachers, schools, and especially students. In a lot of places in the United States, big cities, small towns, today was back to school, kind of. Some of the back to school is entirely virtual. Some of it is a mix of virtual and in-person. I think the new term is synchronous and asynchronous. And then some of it is actually just putting the kids back into the classrooms. It's become an intensely political issue, rising to the level of the presidential race. So Joe Biden wants to be president of the United States in 2020. He has to have a plan for reopening schools. Is he coming a little late to the issue since, well, some of these schools are already open? Joining us to talk about Joe Biden's school opening plan, Joy Pullman, managing editor of The Federalist, author of the book The Education Invasion, and a recent column titled Joe Biden's School Reopening Plan Would Keep Kids Online Indefinitely. Joy, welcome back.
Hi there.
So given the fact that many schools have already opened in various ways, and given the fact that Biden wouldn't actually take office until January of 2021, is Vice President Biden a little late on the issue?
Well, that's actually a really good question. And it seems to me that when I listened to his speech that he billed as an important one announcing his sort of schools policy, which you're right, even if he were to become elected, it couldn't take place until, you know, next January when he would be inaugurated. And by then, everyone hopes and all the numbers seem to be indicating, you know, that ought to be back to pretty much normal in the country, you know, hopefully. So, right. So his plan would have to be moving forward from that point. And it indicated, I think, what's really going on here are two things. It was more of a rhetorical positioning, I think, marking a shift in Democrats who have been the party of shutting down schools all summer long. And so he expressed, and it seems that they have been getting some focus group and parent and constituent feedback that is not really working for lots of people. So it seemed to me that Biden's speech was more about positioning Democrats as a pivot, you know, from where they had been, basically changing their stance on that because Americans weren't really buying it. The way they've been, it hasn't been proving workable in reality, which is kind of the way things go with Democrats nowadays.
So go into a little more detail. What has been the Democratic track record on advocating for the closing of schools?
Well, the Democratic Party is basically owned by labor unions, the largest of which in the United States actually is government teacher unions. So they are a major source of both funding for the Democratic Party as well as on-the-ground campaign volunteers. So it's very important to Democrats as a party to pay out for the union supporters that they have. So the unions have been strongly against opening schools and providing services to taxpayers in exchange for the money and the purchase that government public schools have on Americans' tax dollars and kids. So they basically use the coronavirus as an excuse to say both we need more money and B, we need less work. I mean, that sounds crazy, I know, but literally we had specific union chapters demanding huge increases of funding for public schools while advocating for literally less work for teachers for the not even doing online schooling in some instances. And there have been a couple of kind of crazy head-snapping switches from Democrats in the coronavirus issue. In January and February, they were tended to be downplaying it. They were complaining that Trump was a racist and overblowing things, for example, when he shut down international travel early on. And then everything suddenly switched in March to coronavirus is going to kill us all, you know, shut everything down, everyone hide in your basements, assume a fetal position, don't go anywhere unless you work for Amazon, bringing people stuff to their doors by click of a button. And now we're seeing another pivot from that, you know, nobody leave. If you do leave, you're killing grandma. Kids are, you know, might not get hurt by this disease, but they could be killing people just by walking around breathing on them. And now we see Joe Biden out there claiming that if he had been president, which he didn't actually even run last cycle against Trump, so he couldn't have possibly been president. But if he were president, he says the nation would have reopened schools right now. That's literally what he said. So while Democrats have not done a very good job on the school closing and coronavirus issue, if you just look, for example, at the Democrat-run states such as California, New Jersey, and New York, if you compare them to Republican governor-run states such as Florida, you see, you know, if you compare population to population, very large states, you know, similar demographics, the Democrat-run states and cities have much higher death and infection counts than the Republican-run ones. So Democrats don't have a very good track record, you know, first of all, in just providing a consistent, steady response. That's been more hysteria from their side. And second of all, they don't have an effective track record at actually, you know, keeping safe the vulnerable populations that Americans care about, such as the elderly and other people with compromised health systems.
At least my kind of layperson's observation of this pivoting that has been taking place in the Democratic Party on the issue of schools is kind of has two prongs to it. One is they appear to be just saying whatever position the president takes, we will occupy the opposite position, regardless right. of whether it makes sense. And then coming to slowly realize that this is an issue that voters, in particular suburban mothers, really, mm-hmm. really care about. What are your thoughts?
Oh, right. I mean, speaking as a working mother myself, it is practically impossible to work and take care of children at the same time. You know, they are both mutually exclusive pursuits. And you know, you can kind of pinch hit and live a crazy life for 2, maybe 3 weeks, which was initially about what we were told, you know, 15 days to slow the spread. Anyone remember that, you know, 6 months ago? So you can kind of, you know, fudge things together for a couple of weeks, but living like this indefinitely is just really not good either for kids or for providing income for your family to pay your bills. And so since that is a really key constituency for Democrats, is the, you know, suburban, especially working women, they started seeing, you know, again, our rhetoric, never holding, you know, of basically holding schools hostage to keep Americans scared, to wring a lot, billions more dollars out of, you know, the next generation's debt tab that we're sticking them to every single year. You know, that just was hitting the reality of parents saying, look, I can't stay locked down. You know, it's been a whole summer. It was 3 months before that summer. This is not a, you know, way that I can live, which, you know, again, if someone had the foresight to look ahead at that, we would have known that back in March. But, you know, our leaders aren't exactly what I would call statesmen and stateswomen nowadays.
What did you find when you went digging for Biden's plan? You mentioned his speech, which was kind of a string of generalities. What did you find when you went looking for his plan to reopen schools?
Yeah, it was actually really interesting. I mean, so of course, you know, I heard, you know, the day before he was to give a speech, it was, you know, out on Twitter, oh, he's going to give a speech about his plan for reopening schools. So I was queued up to listen to it. And so when I started listening to it on C-SPAN, I was looking for, okay, what's your plan? You know, half an hour speech and Q&A after it, I really listened and I really didn't hear any plan. You know, I heard Biden say, you know, if I were president, we wouldn't have the problems we're having now, which is, you know, you can't really prove that because, you know, you can't prove a fantasy. It's not possible to actually test that proposition. And I heard him say, you know, we have to reopen schools. He really emphasized the reopening part, which I was really surprised with because, as you and I discussed, Democrats have been really against reopening. You know, so I was surprised to hear him be so very prominently, rhetorically in support of opening schools. And so, you know, but I, again, and he's, you know, then he slipped in this line, you know, if you want details, go to joebiden.com. So I thought, okay, you know, let me learn more about this plan. It's, you know, people consider policy pretty boring. It's on his website. So I, you know, I go over, as promised, it's, you know, on his front page, there's a link that says, you know, here's a fact sheet about Biden's plan for reopening schools. So I click on that. And that actually, you know, is not, you know, I read it and it's less than 500 words. So it's a, not much of a plan. And it really basically only has, you know, one, maybe two concrete specific things that Biden says he supports, predominantly being sending billions of more dollars to schools. So, I mean, since I'm an education reporter, I already know that schools have gotten $31 billion. Congress passed them an extra amount in March. And now, people need to know that Congress annually allocates about $60 to $70 billion to K-12 schools every year. And that is a lot of money, but it's actually only about 10% of what public schools spend on kids because, you know, that's largely a state and local education issue. Anyway, so Congress added half a year's worth of additional federal funding for schools in the name of coronavirus that they haven't spent. So here Biden is saying we need, you know, Democrats asked for $200 billion more dollars on top of that $31 billion. But I already, you know, I know that, you know, the $31 billion isn't spent, but that's about the only thing in this fact sheet that I found. So I thought, okay, is this really the whole plan? Just a bunch of money? Where would that money go? Where would it come from? What would it go to? How will money solve, you know, coronavirus? I mean, you know, we all know when we're sick with the flu, we can't like eat dollars or anything. You know, money doesn't necessarily solve problems like viruses. So, but there was nothing there. But, you know, at the bottom of the speech, it said, you know, it referred to another thing that the Biden-Harris plan for schools and coronavirus. So I click on that next thing. And that is kind of the last thing I found from the campaign. And this one was a little longer. It's about 1,700 words, which is about 3 to 4 pages long in Microsoft Word. And it basically emphasized three things that I talk about in my article. And the first one, again, is just more money, 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 money. The second one is creating a bunch of commissions. You know, so Biden would assemble several different commissions to do a number of different things. I've been watching Washington for a long time. Commissions don't tend to be very effective. They basically take a lot of time and a lot of money, and then they issue recommendations, and that takes a lot of time. And like, look, we're in September. We don't have time. You know, our kids need to be in school. A commission's not going to solve this problem of opening schools right now. Anyway, and so then the last thing, you know, was he referred to some vague measures of creating a national plan to basically tell every school in the country what the criteria should be for whether they should reopen or not. So this was, I mean, that was kind of the only unique thing that I saw in this last policy document from the Biden campaign. And it basically included measures that were vague. You would not, from reading that plan, know specifically, okay, what exact infection rate or death rate or hospitalization rate of coronavirus would be the threshold at which Biden would say that my town shut down its schools. It's not in there. There's not even a reference made to anything obliquely, any way that you could hold Biden accountable for specific anything. And he also said, you know, that another one of his measures would be in establishing contact tracing. That's where these people the government hires calls up every single person who's been got a positive test and asks them to, you know, list everybody they've been in contact with for the past 2 weeks. And not only would establishing that take a lot of time and be very expensive, we've had states been trying to do that since, you know, 6 months ago, since coronavirus became a thing. And many, you know, of them aren't even up and running wholly. But even the ones that are finding that 75% of the people they contact won't even cooperate with them. So that's not proven to be a very effective. And again, that's just even having the program workable. There's no proof in the United States that any of these contact tracing has actually reduced transmission rates. So far, basically all of the Biden plan really is a lot of sound and fury signifying nothing. There's nothing in there that's been shown that is very effective at doing what he says is his goal, which is, you know, keeping kids safe from coronavirus.
Joy Pullman is our guest. She's managing editor of The Federalist. We're talking about Joe Biden's plan to reopen schools. Would Biden's plan allow local authorities to adapt to their local situations? We'll answer that question next. thanks to a generous donor, we've purchased a building for the new studios and offices of Issues Etc., Lutheran Public Radio, and The Word of the Lord Endures Forever.
The donor will match up to $200,000 for the purchase and renovation.
The entire cost is approximately $375,000.
You can view an architect's rendering and make a special tax-deductible gift at issuesetc.org
or call 618-223-8385.
Thanks for your consideration.
I'm afraid of death. Do I have enough faith to die? Will it be painful to die? What about deathbed conversions? Does God really forgive me if I've lived my whole life not as a Christian? These and many other questions are answered in the September issue of The Lutheran Witness, The Ars Moriendi, The Art of Dying Well. To subscribe, visit cph.org/witness. The Lutheran Witness, helping you interpret the world from a Lutheran perspective, cph.org/witness.
Solid. Serious. Substantive. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Looking for a foreign language program that will revolutionize your students' vocabulary knowledge and their understanding of grammar? How about a program that teaches critical thinking skills, too? Look no further than Memoria Press's Latin curriculum. Students of all ages can use these Latin study programs. Give your students the gift of Latin today. To order, visit memoriapress.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR20. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
Do you know any military veterans in your church or community? Do you have a passion to support and reach them with the gospel of Jesus Christ? Then Operation Barnabas is for you. Called by Christ's love, Operation Barnabas engages, empowers, and equips LCMS faith communities to provide hope, healing, and support to military-connected persons living in their community. Operation Barnabas is a program of LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. Find out more at lcms.org/armedforces.
We're discussing Joe Biden's plan to reopen schools with Joy Pullman, author of the book The Education Invasion. I'm Todd Wilkin. You're connected to Issues Etc. Thanks to Wilfred, Kimberly, William, Bryant in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, and Kim in Gresham, Oregon, for your financial contributions in the last 24 hours for the new studios and offices of Issues Etc., Lutheran Public Radio, and The Word of the Lord Endures Forever. A generous donor has agreed to match up to $200,000 for the property purchase and renovation. The entire cost is about $375,000. Learn how you can double your gift at issuesetc.org/New Studios, issuesetc.org/New Studios, or give us a call, 618-223-8385. Joy, of those three things, the big infusion of cash that is going to go to schools on top of the infusions they've already got, the commissions, which you said aren't really going to go anywhere fast, the third point, the national plan for every school, would Biden's plan allow local authorities to adapt to their situations?
That's not really clear to me from reading it. It appears to me that he's trying to, his campaign is trying to say both things, both that, you know, and the emphasis really is on complaining that Trump has not done this yet. So Biden, in his speech and in this plan, you know, say one of the things Trump should have done was create a national plan for what school to tell schools what to do about coronavirus. But Biden's plan also says that he would allow for local control. So I don't really know how those two things are really workable together. It seems that they're kind of different approaches. You pick one or the other. So he is saying that he would do both things.
I think the parents, and primarily here we're talking about school, these parents, what they want is granular detail. What they want is, what if I show up at school and my kid has a temperature? What's going to happen to me? When is he going to be able to go back to mm-hmm. school? Does it provide any of that kind of protocol for safety in individual schools?
No. It discusses, like I said, it discusses things, contact tracing, buying schools a lot more of, you know, protective equipment, sanitizer, but it does not give very clear metrics for, you know, what exactly a school or a family or a child must do to go to school according to what Biden's campaign believes is safely.
So how does his plan address or fail to address the weakness of online education?
Well, basically, by that is one of the things I mentioned earlier, you know, the number of commissions that Biden would create. And one of them would be a commission to basically, you know, turbocharge, create the creation of online education. And I view that as everybody was pretty much aware by our experience with it this spring and unfortunately for some folks again this fall, that an online education is for the mass populace, pretty deficient. It can work in a pinch hitting in some circumstances. Sometimes it's better than the alternatives, but for the default basic mode of instruction, it's really cannot compare to in-person instruction. So Biden's attempting to address people's encounter with that reality and kind of mix it with Democrats continuing to tell Americans how dangerous going to school is by saying, you know, they're going to make online education better than it has been the experience of people to be by creating a very expensive commission to develop ways to make that happen.
How does Biden's plan address the racial disparities, in particular when it comes to online education?
Yeah, that's actually a really weird thing because his plan says that it would prioritize or allow for prioritizing specific groups of students to go back to schools before other students do. And it does not specifically say this, but some school districts have taken that principle and used it to actually deny white children the ability to get back into classrooms before black children. I know, to me, it sounds crazy, you know, because we're Christians, Todd, right? We believe in treating all people equally because God made them all. But it is actually the case that in the state of Washington and the state of Illinois and in the state of California, several school districts prioritize getting kids back into classrooms according to their race. And of course, in today's America, what that means is, you know, black kids, brown kids, that's the terms some people use. I don't know. I don't like any of those terms, would be put into classrooms earlier than white children. So that is not explicitly stated in the Biden plan, but that is how that parameter has been used in practice in Democrat-controlled school districts around the country.
So you mentioned this a little bit before, but does the Biden plan suggest any metrics for when do we move forward? When do we go to stage two or move to in-person school or maybe even just metrics of this was a success or this was a failure?
No, there's not one of those things. And that's one of the most annoying things to me as a mother is, you know, I mean, and also not just a citizen living in America under, you know, these coronavirus. It has been so frustrating to live at the whim of somebody's pen and phone. Obama famously, when he was president, just ignored Congress and legislated from the presidency over many significant things. And that approach to governance has been transplanted into even, you know, Republican. I live in a Republican-controlled state, you know, and my governor's been doing that. Just we haven't had our legislature meet and have our representatives have voice in the way that we're allowed to live under these coronavirus conditions. So just whenever the governor, he feels bad or, you know, the media coverage is scaring him or whatever, out he comes with a new set of rules for us. And that can happen as frequently as every few days for us. And so that would be the mode of living under our Joe Biden coronavirus plan without any clear metrics for what constitutes a clear threat from this virus or any virus. And also, you know, looking forward to the future, look, you know, we have pandemics sweep the nation and the world routinely. You know, it's a thing that happens in the world. And so were that to happen under a Biden presidency, whether it's coronavirus or something else, it's a pretty good bet we can expect to be thrown into that kind of day-to-day chaos of pen and phone legislation, someone controlling, you know, how well you can breathe, literally, you know, how whether you can talk to people comfortably would be all at the whims of somebody's pen and phone again.
So someone is naturally going to ask, that's Biden's plan such as it is. What does President Trump's plan appear to be? How would you describe that?
Well, it's a very difficult situation for Trump or any president because, of course, I mean, and we have this situation in the United States where you know, the public health emergencies are something that is largely relegated to the states. There are powers that the president has, but kind of like with the riots all across the cities, the president doesn't just have legal power to use that pen in the phone to tell everybody what they need to do, to use police, to use, you know, public health authorities. So really, you know, what the federal government is actually limited to is providing guidance. And Trump's Centers for Disease Control has provided that guidance to schools. It did so early on. And his education secretary have been from May, I want to say, is about the right time. They started, you know, saying publicly, we are going back to school in the fall. You know, we need to have normalcy for the nation's children. This virus, you know, the data indicates that, I mean, and that has been borne out since, that kids are less at risk from this COVID-19 than they are from the seasonal flu for dangerous or hospitalizations from that. The seasonal flu is actually more dangerous to kids, and we don't shut down schools over that. So we need to get kids back to schools. You know, the nation needs it. The kids deserve their education. So they've been consistently using their bully pulpit to encourage, you know, kids to be able to be getting their education, since COVID-19 is not a serious threat to them that ought to prevent them from getting it.
So finally, with 30 seconds, why do our schools need to reopen as safely and as quickly as possible?
I mean, because of what I just said, you know, the if COVID-19 were mowing down millions of children at a time, everybody would agree, you know, that the kids should not be in school. Their lives are more important. You know, but the data that we have really absolutely, you know, is very clear on the fact that it is not, kids do not transmit the virus almost at all, apparently. You know, they, in fact, in some studies appear to stop the virus. So this, since this is not a major threat to their health, their lives, or to other people's health or lives, the kids deserve to have the education that our nation has promised to them. They need it to become contributing adults in their future lives. And they have been seriously harmed by their lack of an education for the past 6 months.
Joy Pullman is managing editor of The Federalist, author of the book, The Education Invasion, and a recent column titled Joe Biden's School Reopening Plan Would Keep Kids Online Indefinitely. You can read it and purchase The Education Invasion on the Talk On Demand Archives page at issuesetc.org. Joy, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll discuss Speaking God's Word with Dr. Ed Grimmenstein, author of the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for September, Speaking Boldly, and its media coverage of religion with Terry Mattingly. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Hey, Todd, what have our listeners noticed first when visiting the LPR studios?
Definitely the small size and the dirt.
Well, not anymore, thanks to our friends at the Cleaning Authority. They've turned this man cave into a space that meets even our wives' approval.
Whether it's our office or your home, the Cleaning Authority is your cleaning service provider in the St. Louis area.
To schedule a free estimate or to find out more, visit thecleaningauthority.com. Thecleaningauthority.com.
The grace of God, the church's music, the Lord's Supper every service every Sunday, preaching Christ crucified and risen, our hope for years to come. There is hope in St. Louis, Hope Lutheran Church, that is. 5218 Neosho Street, St. Louis, Missouri. Find us on the web at hopelutheranstl.org.